morning and welcome to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. Judge Diaz and I are glad to welcome today Judge John Gibney from the Eastern District of Virginia, who's graciously agreed to come down and show us how to do it today. And so with that, we're ready for argument in our first case, 10-1984, Turkson v. Holder. Mr. Luce, we'll be glad to hear from you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the Court. I'm Timothy Losey, and I represent the petitioner in this action, James Omoa Turkson.
I said that wrong, didn't I?
Not a worry, Your Honor. You're not the first, and I assure you, you won't be the last.
I apologize.
In a world where last names are impossible to pronounce, mine looks like a gimme, so I understand.
Right.
When Mr. Turkson's case was before the immigration judge granted Mr. Turkson's request for deferral of removal under the Convention Against Torture, based on a finding that Mr. Turkson would likely be tortured if he was returned to Ghana. The immigration judge thus deferred removal under the Convention Against Torture, but the BIA reversed the immigration judge's decision. And the BIA was wrong for either of two independent legal reasons. The first is that the BIA improperly reviewed the question of whether Mr. Turkson was likely to be tortured upon return to Ghana de novo. That was a mixed question of fact and law that should have been reviewed in its component parts. The second independent reason is that the BIA engaged in improper factual finding regarding country conditions in Ghana. If the BIA disagreed with the immigration judge's factual findings, it should have reviewed those findings for clear error, but it did not do so here. It reviewed the entire record de novo. With respect to the first point of error, the immigration judge entered a finding that Mr. Turkson was likely to be tortured if he was returned to Ghana. That is indisputably a mixed question of law or fact, of law and fact. The BIA's decision acknowledges it as so, and the government doesn't dispute that characterization on appeal. Now, when there is a mixed question of law and facts, both this court and the governing guidance provided by the Attorney General dictate that question has to be reviewed in its component parts. The factual elements must be reviewed only for clear error, whereas the legal elements, the questions of pure law, the questions of discretion, the questions of judgment, may be reviewed de novo.
Well, they get to decide whether what was going to happen to Mr. Turkson. They get to review whether that constitutes torture de novo. Because torture is a word of art in this field. They decide whether it meets the legal definition of torture.
That is correct, Your Honor.
But what was going to happen to him was a pure factual finding. Is that right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And what did the immigration judge find specifically was going to happen to him? That's the trouble that I have looking at the record.
Sure, Your Honor. What the immigration judge specifically found is that when Mr. Turkson would be returned to Ghana, he would likely be detained by police authorities. And then the immigration judge looked at the current country conditions in Ghana to find that the police authorities have a consistent record of human rights abuses, of excessive force, and that the police use that excessive force throughout the country and have even used that force to disperse political demonstrators.
Why is the immigration judge in any better position than the BIA to make that predictive determination?
The reason why, Your Honor, is it depends upon factual findings. The current conditions in Ghana, what happened to Mr. Turkson, those are all dependent. The determination of what is likely to happen is a present-day factual determination.
Well, I suppose you can say that with respect to the present country conditions, but then the separate question of what is likely to happen in the future as a result of those present-day conditions, that's the problem that I have. Why is the immigration judge in any better position than to whip out his crystal ball than the BIA and make that determination?
For two reasons, Your Honor. The first is that the Attorney General's guiding regulations dictate that the immigration judge is the person who's in the best position. And so the regulations describe a scenario where the immigration judge is looking not at this specific situation. Unfortunately, we don't have Attorney General guidance on this specific issue, or I suspect we wouldn't be having this conversation. But what we do have it on is on a related issue of whether removal would result in a substantial hardship. And when one looks at the Attorney General's guidance, it says it's not just the facts of what happened to the individual, but also what the individual says constitute that hardship that get bundled up as a factual determination reviewed for clear error. What is reserved to BIA de novo is whether that set of circumstances constitutes the type of hardship that warrants cancellation of removal. The same is true here because the BIA has reserved to itself through these guidance and regulations the ability to opine on the ultimate legal issue, which is whether there's torture. But under the guiding regulations, the Attorney General has dictated that he wants those factual determinations to be made by the immigration judge. And I think a parallel from this court's jurisprudence helps, Your Honor. I mean, when we have these types of determinations of likelihood outside the immigration context, they are quintessentially findings of facts that are given to juries. Juries are asked in court cases to opine on whether it's likely or not an individual is going to suffer some future loss because of a present-day injury. Is this injury going to prevent them from getting a certain job? Is it going to require certain treatment? And those are things that are entrusted to the jury as things that are best left within their determination based on their assessment of the facts as they currently stand. And similarly, in the immigration context, this court has previously held that those are quintessentially factual determinations. The SAINTA opinion involved the question of whether government acquiescence in torture was a factual or legal determination. This court held that it was a factual determination. And so both the regulations dictate that this is something that is entrusted to the immigration judge's discretion, and this court's jurisprudence indicate that it is something entrusted to the immigration judge's decision. And I believe the policy reasons behind that, Your Honor, and to get down to the specific answer to your question, the reason why the immigration judge is best suited to determine those is he is the one who is reviewing the testimony and the documentary evidence in the first instance. And it is based on those facts that he is making a present-day determination of likelihood. Now, the tension between these facts, I think, is evident in the way that the BIA's opinion addresses the immigration judge's opinion.
But as I take it, the bottom line view is that you say the error here is that the BIA did its review. They reviewed all of the factual determinations and assumed for the purposes of argument that future predictability is a factual determination. They did that de novo, should have done it under a clearly erroneous standard for that part. So even if you were to win here, you would still end up going back where the BIA could still say, you think the determination was clearly erroneous.
That's correct, Your Honor. Still, that would be a situation where the BIA would have applied the correct legal standard. And because they did not apply the correct legal standard, reversal is warranted here. And there needs to be the opportunity to go back to the BIA and have it apply the correct legal standard. And I believe it's even possible that if the BIA applies the clearly erroneous standard, what it may do is remand again to the immigration judge. So those are all possible eventualities of what may happen. And it is possible that Mr. Turchin's case may come out the same way, but I don't believe it should, because if the appropriate standard of review is applied.
Well, we wouldn't get into that.
That's correct, Your Honor. As an advocate, it naturally gets I will be involved in that stage, but this panel will not. You're correct, Your Honor, that the question before this court is whether the correct legal standard was applied. And it was not, because it was an indiscriminate de novo standard of review.
Counsel, you mentioned the analogous regulations related to cancellation of removal, and I believe there are also similar regulations that make that distinction on the standard of review with respect to asylum cases. But, of course, you concede that the regulations are silent as to the CAT standard. So in the face of that silence, why shouldn't we defer to the BIA's decision not to apply that same bifurcated standard of review in this context?
Because it's clearly erroneous for two reasons. The first is that it doesn't follow the parallel.
What's clearly erroneous? What are you talking about?
The BIA's interpretation of the regulations here is clearly erroneous. It doesn't follow the parallels and the guidance that the Attorney General sets up. The main premise of the government's argument is that only historical facts may be reviewed for clear error. The only support that the government has for that proposition is the discussion of asylum cases, which are based upon past persecution. In those situations, it's not surprising that the Attorney General is providing guidance on what happened, because in asylum cases, that is the question, whether what happened in the past amounts to persecution. When the provisions in the guidelines that in the Attorney General's guidance that discuss events that will happen in the future, the Attorney General's guidance dictates that those be reviewed as a factual bundle for clear error. And the second reason is that the BIA's interpretation of its own regulations is erroneous is that it's inconsistent with the governing law, the governing understandings of what constitutes a question of fact and a question of law. The core dispute here between Mr. Turkson and the government is whether this is a question of fact or a question of law. And that is something...
Isn't it true that the provision 8 CFR 1003.1D3, scope of review, applies across the board to all decisions in which the BIA reviews immigration judge decisions?
Yes, that regulation applies.
And that's the heart of your argument, isn't it?
Yes, there's this bifurcated standard within 1003.1D of how the court is to review, how the BIA is to review questions of law and questions of fact. And here, Your Honor, the BIA doesn't even mention this bifurcated standard. It applies an indiscriminate de novo review. And going back to Judge Diaz's question of why that is not entitled to deference, it's inconsistent with the 2002 change that was made in the regulations. Before 2002, the BIA had authority to review all decisions. But in 2002, the Attorney General decided to have a more refined approach to the way that the BIA reviews opinions. The BIA doesn't have a refined approach here. It has indiscriminate de novo review. And this court, in its conclusion, could follow the Kaplan decision from the Third Circuit, which cogently lays out the ways, and I've been discussing them, but it also, the Third Circuit in the Kaplan decision lays out the reasons why the BIA's interpretation of the regulations are erroneous. And this court has cited Kaplan for the very proposition that factual determinations include predictions about future events. And so this court has already, in an immigration context, cited approvingly the very point of the Kaplan opinion, which petitioner urges this court to adopt. And based upon that opinion, based upon the Attorney General's guidance, and based upon ordinary principles of jurisprudence, of the way this court treats mixed questions of fact or law, we submit that the BIA's decision was in error. I reserve some time for rebuttal, but if the panel has any questions, I'm happy to answer them or return after the government has presented the question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Green.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the Court. Charles Green for the Attorney General. This case involves a native and citizen of Ghana who was not eligible for any relief from removal other than cat deferral due to his conviction for an aggravated felony. Now, because the Board properly exercised its de novo review authority in applying the more likely than not legal standard to the undisputed record facts, when it determined that Turkson was not eligible, had not met his legal burden for cat deferral, this court must deny his petition.
Well, are you familiar with the Fourth Circuit's decision in the Creston Vallardes case versus Holder?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why doesn't that pretty much tell us how to rule in this case? I mean, in that case, this court said the BIA disagreed with the IJ not just because it rejected the legal interpretation of undisputed facts, rather it took the contrary view of gang members' motivation, classic factual question. And later on it said whether the government is unable or unwilling to control private actors is a factual question that must be resolved on the record in each case. Isn't that just a corollary to what we have in this case?
It's very similar, Your Honor. However, in Creston, well, in the first instance, in Creston, the court did reaffirm the standard that the board properly exercises de novo review when it applies the legal standard to the facts. Creston is different, however, for several reasons. As we pointed out in our 28J letter, in Creston, the two issues that you just mentioned, the nexus and the unable and willing to control, are subsidiary questions. They're not the ultimate legal standard at issue. Moreover, in that case, the court, what it found was that the board had gone in and, in fact, changed the facts. For the second one, where they cite Kaplan, unable and willing, the board didn't even address the immigration judge's findings of fact and simply dismiss them. That is not the case here. Here, the facts are undisputed. What the board did was went and looked at those facts and considered them, but in the conducting their legal analysis, did not agree that the immigration judge had conducted the proper legal analysis in the application of this more likely than not legal standard.
Well, but they didn't say that the immigration judge misinterpreted the meaning of torture. They said that it was a future event and that, therefore, they got to decide what happened. Isn't that what they decided in this case?
Isn't
that what you argue in this case in your briefs?
In this case, what we argue is that more likely than not is also a term of art. The Kaplan court got that wrong because more likely than not, when the convention, the torture convention,
it's a term of art only in immigration.
Yes, Your Honor, that's right, because it's a standard, and it was one of the two standards that existed in immigration law for likelihood of future harm. One was the well-founded fear asylum standard, and the other was the withholding more likely than not standard. And when the convention came before the Senate, because the Senate had to implement it, in their comments, the Senate explained that they had chosen one of these two legal standards, the more likely than not standard. Therefore, the Third Circuit erred when they separated the two. The predictive question cannot be separated from torture. And that is a difference. That's longstanding immigration law.
I mean, suppose they decided that, I mean, a classic example of a legal application would be if this fellow was sent back to Ghana and they concluded he would have to get a haircut when he went back. And then the BIA could conclude that that's not torture, but they couldn't conclude that he wouldn't have to get a haircut, right?
Well, Your Honor, that's obviously that's not a what was at issue here.
Well, but okay, but they concluded that there are certain things that are going to happen to him. The BIA can't review under a de novo standard whether those things are going to happen. Can
well, it? Well, they can certainly review de novo the application of a legal standard, and you're right, the board can't go back and specifically refine facts. In this case, they didn't do that. They took the record facts as they were.
But they gave them a different way. They never said that we find that the immigration judge's determinations of these facts were clearly erroneous.
That's correct, Your Honor. They did not say clearly erroneous because clearly they didn't find that they were clearly erroneous in this case. They specifically...
distinguishing Kaplan, as I read this opinion from the BIA, it simply says Kaplan is wrong about these questions of fact because we do not understand our regulations to treat this type of predictions, fact-finding, subject to clear error review. So, unless there's something I've missed in this opinion, the basis for the board making this distinction and saying that these future-related factual decisions, which would be, as the Capitol Court pointed out, factual determinations in almost any other area of the law, the reason for this distinction in immigration is because we think our regulations say that. But as Judge Gibney indicated in a question to opposing counsel, the regulations seem to go the other way. Certainly Attorney General's guidance does. So why don't you point to exactly what in the regulations gives the basis for that conclusion?
The board's conclusion is an overall statement. What they have done is they've stated that in applying
the basis stated in the opinion is our regulations. So unless I've missed something, it looks like you've got to tell us what in the regulations gives the board the authority that it now claims.
Yes, Your Honor. It's 1003.1D3, which your colleague Judge Gibney did read. However, it's more than that. It's the Attorney General's comments to the regulation which inform, because remember, these are the Attorney General's regulations, and although the terms de novo and clear error review, as the Attorney General states, have generally the same meanings that they do outside of the immigration context, the Attorney General specifically, explicitly limited them. He said, with some modifications in his accompanying comments.
Where the Attorney General's guidance says the board will defer to the factual findings of the immigration judge unless clearly erroneous, then there's an exception somewhere else that's going to tell us that these future events are not included in that maxim.
No, Your Honor. Again, I think the issue is that when it's an application of law to the facts, then the board gets to look at that de novo. And in order to apply the legal standard, they need to look at the facts. They need to assess those facts. And as this court held in Lynn, they can also reevaluate those facts.
Well, but doesn't – essentially what they did here was say, all right, we've got this report. We choose to believe certain aspects of that and discount what the witnesses said for the for Mr. Curtis. That's what happened.
They did call it a speculative testimony, which is a legal determination about the probative value of the testimony.
Right. Probative value is a classic decision for a jury or a judge who's hearing the evidence, right?
Again, Your Honor, in this case, this is the immigration context where the Attorney General, the Senate adopted a standard that is a long-held immigration standard that encompasses this as a term of art. And on top of that, the Attorney General specifically said that he was adopting those standards of review with certain modifications.
How is more likely than not different than the preponderance of the evidence standard we're all used to?
Again,
I recall instructing a jury that preponderance means more likely than not. And I've never been reversed.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Again, this is the immigration context, Your Honor. And the more likely than not is a legal standard. And in Crespin, the court was looking at subsidiary questions, not the ultimate legal judgment. And
when you say it's the immigration context, I understand that, but you would think that the regulations would have been a lot clearer if, in fact, we were going to go down a different path simply because of the distinction here as to future facts, predictive events. What is it about the regulations here that suggests that the results should be different?
Again, it's the commentary to the regulations, Your Honor. It's the Attorney General's comment that he specifically approves these, but with modifications. It's his charge to the board in those same comments that the board is responsible for ensuring consistency throughout the immigration courts in the nation. And in order to do that, they need to be able to assess the facts and ensure that those facts add up to the legal standard when they apply that legal standard.
Well, but that's going to be the case in every context. There's just nothing specific here in these regulations that suggests the results here should be different simply because the immigration judge is being tasked with assessing future predictive facts. And as Judge Gibney, I think, has pointed out, we pass juries and fact finders with that charge every day and don't reverse simply because we on appeal think that if we'd been the fact finder in the first place, we might have reached a different result.
But that's not what they did here, Your Honor. Here, they did what this court authorized in its Lynn holding. The board reevaluated the entire record, but they did not refine
any. Did they reevaluate that under a clearly erroneous standard or the NOVO standard? I think the JG mentioned that perhaps if this case goes back, they might have an opportunity to do that under the less deferential standard, but those are two clearly distinct and different standards, which ultimately can be outcome determinative. No?
They can. That's certainly correct, Your Honor. But in this case, again, the board did not go back and apply a de novo review standard to refine facts of the record. What the board did was simply go back and look at all the facts which the immigration judge found and determine that based on those, the legal standard, more likely than not, be tortured, was not met. As for the line of Fourth Circuit cases that my colleague on the other side cites, Saintha, for instance, those are apples and oranges to this question because those cases are irrelevant because they dealt only with this court's review or this court's jurisdiction with reference to its standard of review of the agency decisions. However, obviously, this case, the only issue here is the board's standard of review and not this court's. The court doesn't have any other questions. We'll just sum up by saying that, again, here the board properly exercised its de novo review authority, applying this ultimate legal standard to the facts of the record, in order to determine that Mr. Turkson had not met the legal standard for cat deferral. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Losey, is that right?
Spot on, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
All right. You have some time in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Green and I obviously have very different views about what the Board of Immigration Appeals did here. But I think that dispute actually illustrates the error. This court cannot tell precisely what the board did because it didn't apply the correct legal standard. If the BIA believes that these facts were clearly erroneous, the BIA should have articulated that standard. The very fact that there is not clarity illustrates the correctness of Mr. Turkson's position, that the BIA applied the incorrect legal standard to the question before it. Now, Mr. Green has argued that this is a term of art in the immigration context.
I think that that is a dangerous proposition for this court to adopt for two reasons. The first is that the Attorney General's intention in 2002 was to bring a more refined approach to the way that the BIA reviews determination. Now, this court has reviewed earlier decisions in the Crespin decision, in the Sainte decision. It's reviewed decisions that have been made about predictions of future facts, and it has determined under its own holdings, Sainte is a good example of this, that the determination of those future facts is a factual determination. For this to be walled off as some sort of special term of art in the immigration context is inconsistent with the refined approach that brought to an end the de novo review regime. It's inconsistent with this court's approach, and as Judge Gibney noted, it's inconsistent with fundamental principles of jurisprudence about what it means to be more likely than not. Now, using it as a special term of art creates a dangerous prospect that there may not be effective review of the government's decision. Consider what would happen in this case. The government argues that the BIA was entitled to review de novo, the likelihood of this future event. We know from the Sainte decision that this court thinks that that is a factual determination. So does this court have jurisdiction to review that type of situation? If the court were to take that perspective, it could create a dangerous system where there would be asymmetrical standards of review, which could impact this court's jurisdiction in other cases. Unless the court has any other questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you very much. We're going to come down and greet counsel, and then we're going to take a short recess.